Billy Legend's Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt-country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Amen Monica brings Arabic Jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
This episode of the Kingston Live Podcast is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
The history of music is woven with the history of technology. In living memory alone, we've witnessed the ways recording technology has completely altered the landscape of music and sound. From the development of overdubbing and looping, enabling new experimentation, all the way up to digital interfaces, democratizing the world of large-scale composition. In under 60 years, we've gone from hiring an orchestra to perform compositions, to the orchestra living on your personal computer. This is Kingston Live, and today we're sitting down with a local artist who leverages technologies, in some cases of his own design, to create music that breaks conventions. The last time we checked in with James Mulvale, he was exploring microtonal music through his electronic music project FastFast. By taking advantage of his tech knowledge and programming, he utilized the notes between the traditional 12-note scale. It was April 2022, and at the time, microtonal music was in a niche within a niche, a space otherwise unexplored in town, and only rarely explored beyond our own borders. But very recently, things have changed. Technology and the arts have once again leapt forward. And due to some surprising developments in popular music and the explosion in popularity of a particular French-Canadian duo, microtonal music is having a moment in the spotlight. And James's explorations as FastFast are once again coming into focus. We're sitting down with James to discuss his music, the impact of AI technology, and his new app that aims to put microtonal music in the hands of composers everywhere. Microtonal music seems to be having a bit of a moment right now. Would you agree?
I think microtonal music has burst into popularity in the last handful of months, but I don't think it's suddenly appeared. I think maybe it's just been noticed.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering if we even need to explain what it is for context. So if you're listening, you would have just heard James's version of our theme music just now, so I think that would kind of set the tone a bit. But yeah, it revolves around that further division of the 12-note scale, which doesn't always mean anything to someone who's not a musician, but I think people hear the difference. You hear that kind of music and you think, oh, wait, something different is happening here.
I would say that the easiest way to think of a microtonal instrument would be your voice. If you try and make every note the same on your voice, it will sound very monotone. But you're naturally going up and down notes that aren't in any particular scale. So if you tried to play along with the notes with a piano, you would fail.
So it's granular.
Yeah. So it's instruments like the voice and unfretted instruments like violins and cellos, fretless basses, trombones, mm-hmm. and anything that can play a range of pitches, not just a fixed pitch like a keyboard instrument. A lot of people say that microtonal music is the notes between the notes. Mm-hmm. So you'd say you have a piano keyboard with C and C sharp. There's an infinite number of notes in between C and C sharp, and you can put one right in between and call it half sharp or half flat.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think the voice is a really good analogy, because that's why singing is so hard, because you have this instrument built into you, which has quite a range, but it's not restricted. There's nothing, like you say, with the frets or the piano keys, there's nothing guiding you to the proper notes. You're sort of free to do whatever you want, which makes it both highly emotional, and there's a lot of granularity and subtlety there, but also a lot of room for error as well.
Yes. The lady Anna Maria Hafifi, that she was doing a talk at the Munich conference, and she talked about how there are two modes, or there are many modes of how your voice works. When you're talking, it's a completely different mode to when you're singing, because you are actively trying to make your vocal cords and all the internal gubbins in your chest vibrate and resonate at a fixed pitch or between a fixed pitch.
Mm-hmm.
This happens incredibly fast when you're talking. You don't notice it. But when you're singing, you have to make it muscle memory, no matter what you do. Like an operatic singer, it will be as natural as talking is.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, too, because we forget there's so many singers, like really great singers, who make it look effortless. But you forget, not only have they trained for many, many years, but there's a lot happening under the hood that we don't see.
Yeah. This lady was doing this throat singing. Where you do, I can't do it, but you have to do, you have harmonics in your voice, and you move parts of your larynx and uvula around. She got this fluoroscopy thing, x-ray, like moving x-ray, watching her larynx move and her tongue move as she was making these harmonics live, and she was singing and making the harmonics so purely she could draw shapes on a graph. She was like, wow, going through an analyzer,
yeah,
you know, the spectrograph, and she was singing, yeah, into a spectrograph live and going doo 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 with her harmonics.
Wow.
And she, it was like drawing a Christmas tree. And she got the bass note, she'd keep the bass drone, but with her harmonics she'd go doo 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 doo,
and she'd, wow,
draw it on the screen in real time.
I need to see that.
I think on YouTube, there's all these things on YouTube that she was demoing live while she was doing it, and she was watching the video of the fluoroscopy at the same time.
Yeah.
And people were just like,
that is so cool.
Well, it's an insight into just what you can do if you have time on your hands.
Yes, yes.
And just get into something so deeply that, like, well, I'm going to practice so hard that my larynx closes up in such a way that it makes this this sound that only I can do.
Yeah.
It's so amazing what the human brain will do when it's got a puzzle it wants to solve.
Yeah, well, throat singing is a whole other thing, and it's so amazing. Like, I always think of Tanya Tagak, just amazing performer, and just insane sounds that come out of that woman. We could have a whole other discussion, I think, about throat singing.
Yeah.
Maybe so. I don't know if somebody must do that locally. We may have to have that discussion at some point. But I really want to hear about this festival. You were in Munich recently for a microtonal music festival. Does it feel like, because I imagine as a microtonal musician, you can feel like an outsider when you go to something like that. Does it feel like, oh, these are my people?
I think it was. We was a bunch of weirdos. it was amazing. I'd like absolutely found
the outcast of the music world. Yeah.
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 But for a moment, we felt like we were just on top of the world, because no one else is doing this stuff. But to us, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're on this little headspace.
It's all like, the outsiders coming together. Yeah, yeah.
All the outsiders coming together. But we felt we had a point. We were brought together. We didn't just decide to do it. It was like,
yeah,
we were invited by the Munich Kammerspiel, which is the massive theatre group in Munich. And they'd gotten together some funding and gotten the universities to put this thing together. And they invited who they believed to be the cream of the crop of the microtonal world. And I was like...
And they picked you.
And they picked me. And I'm like, what? I haven't played for 3 years. I pretty much quit. I gave up performing live. I just couldn't be bothered with it. I thought it had gone. I think the last time I talked to you was the last time anyone seemed interested.
Well, it's...
To me, because I have this thing in my head, these stories that I tell myself.
Yeah.
I convinced myself it wasn't worth it.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, because I love what you do, and I'm sure there are other people who would agree with me. I know there are other people who agree with me, but something like that, I imagine it's got to be very hard to find your audience, especially in a place like Kingston, which we love our music scene, but it is a smaller community. I imagine in a place like Toronto, it might be easier to find that audience, but I'm glad that this festival happened and you were able to find your people.
Has always been the same. I don't drive. If I could drive, I could get myself about and I could take myself to festivals, take myself to gigs, go to Toronto at the drop of a hat and do this and do that. And I have not been able to get it together. So I rely on other people so much that I can't be asking my wife to take me here and there and everywhere all the time, just in case. So I kind of thought, well, unless something really big's happening, I'm not going to try. And everyone, I've played enough in Kingston that no one really wants to see. I tell myself that. No one wants to see this again. I've done it like 20, 30 times. I haven't got any new material. So you just stop, right? You knock it on the head and do other things. I got other projects going and I forgot about it. I got this email.
Yeah,
I got an email from... a guy called Bastian Zimmerman, who I'd never heard of, saying, we're big fans, we're putting together a festival, would you like to perform?
And what was your reaction?
My first reaction was, it's a scam.
Yeah.
okay, well, I'll send you my credit card details, and then you'll get the flight, right? So I politely said no. And said, if you would like, I'd be happy to do a video or a live stream performance. Thank you for your offer. And they wrote back like a couple of hours later saying, no, if we want you to come and we'll pay. So it all changed then.
This is legit.
I still thought it was a scam. In the back of my mind. Because I'd never heard of any of these people.
Yeah.
But then a couple of other people got in touch with me saying, hey, was you invited to this? And I was like, is this real? And then it was like, okay, this is all legit. I have no trust in anyone. It's terrible.
There are a lot of scams out there these days.
Oh, but I do get a lot of them.
Yeah?
Like, especially, it's like, you're an artist. Please sign up for this, and we'll make you famous. Please do this. We really like your music. Mm-hmm. We would like you to come on this particular thing. It will only cost you $150. Like, so many, like at least one a week.
Oh, and
after a bit you're numb to it. But this one just sit, it was like no one's reached out for fast right? Yeah. Not for years.
Because I remember you, I think on social media, you said something about resurrecting fast.
Yeah,
it really felt like that. Like,
yeah, I hadn't played the guitar for 3 years. I had to go and get all the software and download it, and I hadn't got my backing tracks. They were on my old laptop that had been smashed, so I had to go and get an HDMI cable to plug it into the TV so I could actually retrieve the files off my old laptop, put them on my new laptop and hope it worked. Took me about a week to get it working, and I'm like, okay.
So how much prep time did you have between the initial offer and actually performing?
About 3 months.
Okay.
They got in touch.
Was that enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I knew it was real, I went to town and I was like, right, I practiced hard every night.
Ultra focused.
Yeah, every day. At the same time, I was working on the app and trying to get that together, because part of the conference was a performance, but the other one was talking about anything that we got going. Mm-hmm. And was also a round table. With lots of roundtables where we're talking about the future of the industry and the future of microtonal music and the decolonialization of all the other music, trying to get rid of world music and replacing it with a more general, everyone can talk to everyone. It's not the West and the world. It's like, it's everyone. All these scales and tuning systems that have been like ranked by Westerners of like, this is this, and this is this, and this is what they do over there. And like, let them have a conversation. Let everybody talk. Really good discussions at this thing.
Picture for us, like, what does a microtonal music festival look like, and maybe more importantly, sound like? Because my first thought is, what instruments are people using? Like, you use the keytar. There's the Lumatone.
It was the Lumatone, yes.
Were those really popular over there? For those who aren't familiar, it looks like a big honeycomb that lights up. It's
beautiful.
It's a really cool instrument. Yeah, it's like, how would you describe it?
It's classed as an isomorphic keyboard.
Yes.
Which means it's hexagons. Which means that you can have up, down, sort of left, right, and you got three axes that you can can travel on.
You look at it and your brain kind of blue screens.
It does.
Yeah.
But you can look at it as a piano keyboard with just extra ones above. Mm-hmm. You have to play with it to figure it out. I don't think there's any way you can explain any of these things.
Yeah. You just got to jump into it.
You got to go for it. Because
what other kind of instruments would you see there?
There was an organ from the 1500s. You got to remember that 12 notes is only the last 100 or so years. 150 years we've had 12 notes. We kind of whittled it down to our favourite 12. Before that, anything went. There was an organ from the 1500s. The pieces played from 1555 up until 1600. On these things called Fokker organs, or Fokker organs, F-O, umlaut, K-K-E-R. They have 31 notes per octave. So instead of do-do-do-do-do, you have do-do-do-do-do-do. You've got lots and lots of notes in between. And most of them sound ghastly together. But the few that do sound good...
You find those sweet spots.
Really, really good. Sound way more in tune than a piano.
Yeah. But
pianos have compromises that we've all learned to tune out, but when you hear something that's really in tune, it's addictive. It's like, ooh, that's really nice.
Well, one for me, and we're going to get just a little nerdy here, is the major third, and other people have commented on how it's out of tune. Like, if you bring the major third down about 15 cents, it feels better.
Yep.
It feels smoother, but that's just the way that the piano is tuned, and there's not really a way you can change a piano
if you listen
in
to
the moment.
Start of Red Hot Chili Peppers' Scar Tissue, that guitar riff is tuned perfectly. Do 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 do. They had to tune that string just for that recording session. They tuned that string perfectly to get the riff. Live, you don't do it because you have to have an out-of-tune guitar.
That makes a lot of sense. Van Halen was like that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, same kind of tuning. People are trying to figure out, how does he get it to sound like that? Well, part of it, there's a lot of things. A lot of it's just him, but part of it is just that he would tune certain strings to other strings and not to proper pitches.
Yeah, and if there's all these new guitars that are coming out with wiggly frets, not extra frets, wiggly frets, and they try and tune each string to its own intonation, so you can play a perfect major chord and a perfect minor chord. Doesn't matter where you are on your fretboard. So these frets look really strange and twisty, like little snakes.
I've seen those, yeah.
On there. And they kind of sound artificial because it's so in tune. If you play a D chord on a guitar, it never sounds right.
Yeah,
you play an E major chord, it never sounds quite right. But on this one, it sounds so right, it's almost synthesized.
That's so cool, yeah.
There's pros and cons to things being in tune.
Well, and it sounds like you were in the right place to experience that, yeah. What was the best part of the whole trip for you?
There were two things. I really enjoyed my performance, which I'd been looking forward to for forever, right? Because I didn't think it was going to happen.
And you hadn't done it for 3 years.
I hadn't done it for 3 years. But the morning of, I'd lost my voice. So that day was really stressful. I'd lost my voice because I had the best time the night before screaming my lungs out to some live dance tunes by Tacky Bonker and Stephen Weigel and all these guys that were doing the same sort of thing as me, but like taking it into the future, like drum and bass and like real, real, real cool stuff. This guy called Tacky Bonker, he wears a robe and like a visor, and he just, it's audience participation. He gets everyone joining in. He just gets everyone clapping or singing, and there's crazy music going on. Like, and he calls himself this microtonal circus, and he's trying to get people to join. So that was way more fun than my performance.
Well,
and I lost my voice because of it.
That's a great... The fact that someone would try to get people involved, because I imagine even if you're a fan of microtonal music, it's still intimidating in a way, and it's still strange to us, because most of us haven't grown up with those sounds and those arrangements. So
I'll tell you why I think it is. It's intimidating because music lessons, everyone hates music lessons. They have these terrible nightmares and memories of being hit on the hand with a ruler or being told that they're playing it wrong or this is out of tune or that is out of tune. So we all go our whole lives thinking there is a way of doing something and there really isn't. Let's talk about the obvious elephant, the white and black elephant in the room, this Angine de Poitrine.
Yes.
They're fantastic.
And people are into it.
And they're getting polarized. Like, well, people have done this for years. It's all about their look. It's everything. It's everything. If I'd have had the look, I'd have probably made it a few years ago. But I wasn't. I was this sad, like, depressed dude, fat guy looking at his toes wearing rainbow colors, just not fitting in with where he was. Like, these guys nailed it. They're in Quebec. They got a synergy. One doesn't work without the other.
Yeah.
I don't think. The drummer needs the guitar. The guitar needs the drummer. Together they work beautifully. The fact that it's anonymous is another layer of fun. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of it was calculated.
I don't think you could. I mean, if you're looking to gain popularity, microtonal music wouldn't be the obvious route to take.
No.
but just it connected
boredom.
With people.
Boredom is the only reason you go down that route. I've tried everything I can do, right? I'm not saying I've tried everything everyone can do, but, like, I've used my brain in such a way I'm finding patterns. I don't want to do that again. I've done that chord sequence before. I've done that note before. If I'm bored with it, then everyone's bored with it. I think that's what they're doing. They're just trying to make noises, and they've got a groove. They've got such a groove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, no, they never talk about it. They never talk about whether it's microtonal, whether they use polyrhythms or polymeters or time signatures, about any of that, especially on stage. They might talk in interviews with people who want to know about it, but mm-hmm. I think that part of it is the mystery, part of it is the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And then you join in, everyone joins in with something that seems fun.
It's amazing how it's taken off. And fun fact, if you Google Angine de Poitrine right now, spots will come up on your screen.
I haven't done it.
Yeah, check it out. I hope it's still active by the time this is released. But obviously, it's caught on. It's connecting with people. There's, of course, this question of, is it here to stay, or is it just sort of people's interest in it is transitory at this point? It's hard to say, but I do like that it has brought microtonal music and more importantly, just brought something different to the table and to the conversation.
It doesn't have to be microtonal, but I think anything that breaks the conventions that we're kind of getting distilled down to. I hang around a lot of people who are into Suno, which is this AI generative music thing. Mm. I have not used it ever, but it's fantastic for what it does. You can put something into it, you can type some lyrics into it, and it'll churn out something that sounds legit. It'll sound like it's produced properly, sung properly by really good world-class singers, got a string section. Sounds amazing. And when all music is kind of reduced to that, you've got to have something a bit different.
Yes.
That doesn't fit. If it can all get squished down and distilled into C, F, G, A minor, I think that is the hypnotic four chords that the end of the world will happen to. Which is going to all go do, 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 do. But there's another way. You can just break free of the four chords. You could break free of the six chords. You could break free of whatever. But break free of the repetitiveness.
And the predictability.
Predictable, yeah.
That's a conversation that a lot of people have been having, is that a lot of the popularity of Angine de Poitrine and hopefully other acts similar to that, it has been a reaction or sort of a backlash to AI and specifically AI music.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm very, very in with AI. I know a lot about it. I find that you have to keep your enemy close. So I'm particularly interested in what it can do for good and bad.
Yeah.
And I think it can be used for good.
Well, it's like any other technology. It's like, you know, a hammer can be used for construction or destruction. And I think I think the majority of people, certainly myself, are not against AI as a whole, but the fact that it's been forced upon people in almost every facet of life, it seems, and of course the environmental impact. They want to build these data centers that destroy the world and et cetera. But the tech itself, there's a lot of potentially good application, obviously.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I have absolutely no problem with someone who's had a bad day going onto their computer and typing up, write me a song because I hate my boss. He has a stupid bald head and his breath smells. Enter, and then it'll sing you the song and you'll feel better about yourself and you can share it with your workmates and it's fun. It's a bit of fun. So I have no problem with that. But when someone says, I just made this and I'm going to sell it as real music, I have a bit of a problem with that, because one person is getting their emotions out and having a bit of fun, and someone else is going, ah. It's like finding a new scam, isn't it? Yeah. And people have done it. There's a guy called Mike Smith. He's now in jail, but he got over $1 million worth of revenue through Spotify. I think he made over 1,000 tracks that he got them all to be listened to multiple times by bot farms. And he probably paid a lot of money to get it going, maybe 10, 15 grand to get this thing going. But the return was significant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something like that wouldn't be so bad if there weren't people out there pouring their hearts out and putting so much work into their craft and making next to nothing.
Yeah.
By comparison.
And there's another group of people who are saying, we don't care. Like, it's our time now.
It's a one-day journey of musical discovery. The first ever Road Trip Music Festival. Saturday, September 12th in downtown Kingston. Featuring Peach Pit, Gabriel Jacoby, Katie Tupper, now that I live inside, and local favorites like Cassador, Tiny Horse, and Piner. Enjoy a day of music, food, shopping, and community in downtown Kingston. Road Trip Music Festival. Tickets and details at kingstonlive.ca.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Okay, I do have this huge guilty thing, because I did a similar thing when I worked for the libraries I used to write for. I put potentially many people out of work by using sample libraries. So I would say, I need a violin on my piece of music, which is going to be aired on TV next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a violin player, so I'm going to use this sample pack that sounds just like a violin player. It sounds fine, doesn't it? But if you think that every composer in the Western world are doing that now to get their music on TV, and none of the libraries or the publishers can front the money to do proper recording sessions anymore. They don't want orchestras cluttering up their time schedule, right? Mm-hmm. They want their music next week. So I did this for years. I wrote music for like 5 or 6 years.
Well, I think most musicians at this point have used virtual instruments at some point.
I think so. But if I go back in my head, it's not too far away from just typing it in. I want this to sound like this. It's like it's one step. So I can't be.
But it's another step.
It's another
step away from that, though. It's like, at what point do we draw the line? And it feels like people draw the line at AI at some point.
But I think that it boils down to the fact that we're all bored of these 12 bleeding notes.
Yes.
Well, we're bored one way or another.
Well,
there's another way. There's another way of doing it without making everybody else feel bad. You could just try new things.
I'm glad you brought this up, actually, because when you talk about virtual instruments, and for anybody listening who doesn't know what that is, it's basically you can take samples of instruments, like a violin, like you said, and sort of program in your notes. And this has been going on for a long, long, long time, because
At least 30 years.
Yeah, as you pointed out, most people don't have the budget or the resources to hire an orchestra, so it makes sense to do that. But one of the challenges with digital tech in general is digital technology exists to replicate things that already exist in the real world. Yeah. So you can eventually get to a point where everybody's using all the same sounds. And then you take AI, which it's designed to take existing media and look for patterns and regurgitate things based on that.
Averages.
Exactly. Yes, yes. So at what point do we realize that the future is analog? At what point do we realize we need to actually create new things in the real world before we're just making copies of copies of copies of copies?
We get ourselves into this stale situation by our own volition, and we'll get ourselves out. We're just watching it happen, right? Mm-hmm. People who are making new things like this, like Angine de Poitrine or Tacky Bunker or any of these guys, it's happening. People are following them. The attention's going to there. And everybody else who wants to continue listening to Spotify and Suno, they can do that too. I think there's just more options.
Yeah.
I'd like to make everybody in the world more aware of it, but it's up to them whether they're interested enough or whether they're bored enough.
That's another question. I think of people will talk about Canadian music, or they might talk about Christian music. Those aren't genres per se, right? Like, at what point would microtonal music be normalized in a sense where it's not a genre, it's just another tool that can be adapted to different genres?
It's funny you should say that. Like, we had a similar conversation years ago, but going back to this conference, there was death metal people, there was minimalist serialist people who write music that you would only really hear in auditoriums. There was someone who played an accordion, like a 24 notes per octave accordion, and she just looked like a little bird on the stage, fluttering and twitching, and it was like nothing I'd ever experienced. And then there was Maddie Ashman, who played amazing slide guitar, Tolga and Koga, who pretty much invented the fretlet, where you can like insert frets inside regular classical guitars.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
used to gorilla send bags of fretlets to universities to get them interested, and he designed the Stewart's guitar from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Because he, Tolgahan, invented Stewart's guitar, I think Angine de Poitrine exists because of his guitar.
Mm.
So there's a link. It's all happening. Dolores Catarino played this crazy continuum instrument, which is like a Lumatone, but even bigger.
Oh wow!
That she kind of built herself,
like a church organ of Lumatone.
Yeah,
that's what I'm picturing.
It's like just a grid of buttons.
Wow.
There was guys who played a harpsichord, 31 notes per octave harpsichord. There was dance music, all kinds of dance music, all kinds of EDM. You can't say it's a genre.
Yeah.
It's not a genre. It's a way of writing. It's a way of thinking about music. And it's a way of... I hate the word. I still hate the word microtonal. It's like, it's so esoteric and
yes,
stuffy and...
But people hear something different and they need a way to describe it. So...
Yeah.
For the time being, decolonized music.
Yeah.
I really like that you brought that up. I that's very interesting. I would like to see it normalized to the point where it's not seen as a genre in itself.
Well, Ableton, who's a software company who makes a pretty big DAW, have got a fantastic, absolutely free section online. It teaches you about different tunings and different where it comes from, if it has any religious impact, whether you should use it, how you should use it, what's traditional. And it's been written by people from the countries where it's originated. So if you got something like a gamelan, it would be written by someone who's an expert in gamelan from either Japan or Mongolia or whatever country.
I don't even know what that is.
It's from, it's like a xylophone, and it has like seven notes, and they're not at all in tune with Western tuning.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are many cultures that share exactly the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or very similar things that came to be just independently. There's many things like that, and you can go into Ableton and you can learn about it, how to use it, when to use it, download the file to make your piano sound like it.
That's cool.
It'll retune your piano. Yeah. This is the decolonization of music.
Of DAWs, yeah.
Of DAWs.
Yes.
I still use Cubase myself, and I downloaded 10 years ago a pack, a legit pack by East West Companies. There's a clue, right? They call themselves East West Instruments. Complete Composer's Collection. I felt like I was on top of the world when I downloaded that. Going back 10, 15 years.
I still have the box,
like on display, like I'm the Complete Composer's Collection. But there are packs called Ethnic Instruments and Sounds of the World. And so I was like, oh my God, this is so... But I was uneducated too.
Yeah.
Right? So I just went along with it. Like, I'm just some dumb white guy.
Ooh, a sitar.
Make music. I'm going to use sitar to make some sitar music. And I used to get my publisher get in touch with me, say, we need 30 seconds of Indian music, or we need so much African music, and using these words that now you would consider completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
This is how the industry works. I was too busy trying to make a couple of hundred bucks here and there that I would just churn it out. Here's another minute of sitar music with some djembe. Here's another minute of this with that.
Yeah.
It makes me sick now. Like, I did that, and I'm still claiming royalties on it now. Russian techno, that they wanted to sound like Tetris. I remember doing that for a show called Snapped. Like, they want Russian Tetris music.
I've had similar, not the same, but similar challenges in my own work, because a lot of people will... when they ask for, say, a voiceover for a project, a lot of people will start by saying, I need a male voiceover or I need a female voiceover. And I always push back and I say, okay, men and women have the same emotions. What effect are you after?
Yep.
And I'll work with them and we'll try to put together just a list of emotional sort of beats that we want to hit with this piece. And I will recommend a few voices, male and female, and I have a non-binary voice on the roster too. And I'll say, okay, these are the ones that fit the emotional signature that we want to hit. Pick one. And it's amazing how often they will pick either the opposite of what they wanted, or they'll even pick the non-binary voice.
The older I get, the more I realize that we've all learned this stuff off TV. We've all learned what a man is and what a woman is off TV. I mean, we've either learned it from that or our own parents who learned it off TV. It is so ingrained in, like, since you're born, you're brought up with Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and aggressive white men and females. Passive women who just let it happen. And it does, it hypnotizes the entire bleeding world into just, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens. So when it happens, it's okay.
And then
I've never got it.
Yeah. But then when something unusual comes around, like, say, microtonal music, it's this reaction of, oh, this doesn't fit. This isn't for me.
Yeah. And
there's
a lot of kickback.
This isn't the way things go.
There's a lot of people going, no. And a lot of people going, thank heavens, this is finally something to listen to that doesn't sound like everything else.
I like what you said earlier when you're talking about AI and how it's just more options. Like, there's something for everybody, and we don't like to force things on people, but the idea that you can make things available, and at the same time, hopefully microtonal music does seem to be having a moment with the popularity of Angie de Patrine. You know, hopefully it's just more options for people at the very least.
Yeah, I think the microtonalness is the last thing any casual listener would think to name.
A lot of people don't have the vocabulary for that.
Yeah, but it's fun. I think most people will say it's fun.
And they recognize that it's different. Well, they can't always articulate the difference, but there's that feeling of something different is happening here.
There's a band called Horse Lords who are not a million miles away from Angine de Poitrine. But okay. Horse Lords, there's three of them, I believe. There's a guitar, drums, and a saxophone player. They're great. They do all this crazy polyrhythm stuff. Just as amazing performance. Just as amazing. But they stare at their shoes and they're very serious. And they're into it. They're into the math and they're counting, right?
Yeah, right? Yep.
The performance doesn't sound a million miles away, but Angine de Poitrine, they're having fun, right?
Yeah,
and we went back to when I was chatting to Tacky Bunker. It's like, if you make it fun, people will have fun. He was getting people involved and like giving them like, what was he doing? Giving them lollipops or something, or giving them glasses, like just making it a bit different type of performance. So I'm coming out of that thinking, what can I do? Wouldn't it be cool to do like a 3D thing, give everyone 3D glasses and like have some cool like cyan and magenta projections that kind of just twist your head while you're wearing them? Like, doesn't have to be actual proper anaglyph projections. It could be just random stuff. But yeah, just using them two colours just to make people's heads a bit weird.
Make it a little more immersive.
Yeah, make it more immersive without getting lasers involved, without getting anything too technology involved. Mm-hmm. Try and take it back a step, like anaglyph glasses and some lights. Why not? I also thought about getting my whole kit with my keytar and a laptop and some speakers on a backpack and just going doing it in the streets. Mm. Like, I got a busker's licence last week. And I said, why not? Just take it out and start dancing around and see what happens.
Be one way to bring it to the masses.
Do something a bit different.
Yeah.
If I don't do something different, it's going to be boring, isn't it?
Yeah. Another thing that you've got on the go, you've developed an app.
I have. I developed a microtonal app that was originally intended to help me write my own music. I was... Do you want the sob story or not?
Yes.
So I went, it is sad. I had to go back to England last year because my mum was dying.
Mm.
And I went back for her last week. And then that was all sad. And then I was in England for 6 weeks while all the arrangements were made. And I had a lot of time on my hands. So I started getting into coding with VS Code, which has this AI assistant that can help you kind of put things together and debug things. So I started making this tiny little app that let me play some music. And once you see what it can do, you're like, okay, let's try something else. And then 14 months later of 14-hour-long days of coercing this thing into doing what I want, I've finally got this app together. And I believe it's really unique. It's like a cross between an omnichord and a arpeggiator. Basically, you can hold any chord on your keyboard and it will play it for you in any arrangement that you want. So it'll play arpeggios and drums and a bass line and chords, and all you're doing is basically holding down three notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can strum the screen by just touching the screen. You can strum a whole bunch of strings that it generates, and you can also make it microtonal by using various keys and whatnot. There's a ribbon controller on my Vortex that you can use to make things slightly sharp or slightly flat, so I can now play and write songs on the fly using the app that I've created, whereas before it is so difficult to write microtonal music in Western DAWs.
Yeah, and in real time as well.
And in real time. You can't do it in real time. There's no way you can do it in real time. unless you have a Lumatone. And you practice.
And those
for
cost
years.
Like $5,000.
They're a lot of money and a lot of practice.
Yeah. So this app, is this something that our audience can check out?
The audience can check it out. There is a free version that you can play today on chromotone.ca.
Okay. That's we'll put a link in the show notes as well.
Put a link in the show, yeah.
Yes, yes.
I've got to spell it out.
James, I'm really interested in all this stuff that you're doing, and there's a few things I'm going to have to check out. Thank you so much for coming in today and sharing this with us.
No, thank you.
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by John Sanfilippo. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present This Summer Alone, the first release from Michael K. Myers' 2026 album, The Magic. A true summer song, it features a sunny rock and roll pop sound inspired by the Beach Boys and other California bands of the early 1960s, while the new album features cover art by local artist Cindy Bell. Find it via Michael K. Myers on Bandcamp today. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream This Summer Alone by Michael K. Myers on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I messed up and I got mad. Said some things that made her sad. I told her I'm sorry, but that was not enough. Just ignores. I'm such a loser. Now I've done lost her love. Days get warmer, the nights get cool. I was once a charmer, now I'm just a fool. Looks like I'll spend my summertime this summer alone. I got a new car, it looks pretty good. It's got a sunroof, handles like it should. A passenger seat that is unoccupied. I drive around town, I look at the birds. They look at me, I know that they've heard. And I don't blame them when they turn and away they fly. Cause who wants a guy who only break their heart? Who wants to cry? I mean, why even start? Looks like I'll spend my summertime this summer alone.
Got a spring project on the horizon? Whether you're planting a garden, building a deck, installing a fence, or digging a hole for a new tree, don't forget to click before you dig. Utility lines can be just below the surface, and hitting one can cause major damage, service disruptions, or even serious injury. Visit OntarioOneCall.ca before you start to request a free utility locate. Single address requests require at least 5 business days, while larger or multi-property projects may require up to 10 business days. They'll mark out where it's safe to dig so you can work with confidence. Remember, click before you dig. It's the law. For more information, visit utilitieskingston.com.
Monday.
Yeah.
When traffic's a nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in for a meeting. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. Tune in every Monday night from 11 p.m. to midnight for Shed Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're not afraid to get a little funky.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present The Dark Maths, the second EP from Kingston-based band Gifts of Guilt, an indie rock supergroup featuring members of several local bands. The release draws inspiration from the distinctive sounds of bands such as Pavement, Slint, and The Breeders. Be sure to follow at Gifts of Guilt on Instagram to stay up with the latest band news. Are you a local musician who'd like airplay and social media coverage on CFRC's channels? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Dark Maths on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Gifts, here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Time.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers, and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our